Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's check in with Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Fantastic. Just can't wait. Leaving on Sunday to go do the show down on Radio Row the entire week.
Oh, I thought that might be the case.
Cover the Super Bowl. So it is a dream come true. And a couple of things. We have a lot, actually, to talk with you about. Before we get into the basket brawl, let's talk about a column you wrote about Andy Reid and appreciating Andy Reid, because I think a lot of people like to have fun with the Andy Reid and the clock management and everything else, and I'll be honest with you, I get tired of it. I get tired of people criticizing Andy Reid, considering where this franchise was when he took over and where it is now. And immediately brought respectability, stability, and they were competing for the playoffs immediately when he walked through the door. And now he has this team in the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years and has taken two teams to the Super Bowl, and we can only hope that he wins it. But share with us your thoughts on Andy Reid and what you wrote about.
Well, I think that there's this thing that's done in sports, and it's not new, because my first memory of it was Jim Calhoun. Now, when Jim Calhoun went to UConn in, I think it was around 85, 86, somewhere around there, they had joined the Big East in 79 along with the seven or eight others, and they were bad. They, at best, mediocre. Like, when they had a great year, they were like 500. And I think it was my first year on the Pitt beat, UConn got real good, real fast. You know, this is like his fourth year or whatever. They get real good overnight. They win 30 games. They lose in the Elite Eight on a tough shot that one of Christian Laettner's many masterpieces. And so they don't win, and they don't make the Final Four. And then they have a great team with Donyell Marshall, and they get kind of handled in the Sweet 16. I think it was by Florida or something around 94. And then the next year they come back with Ray Allen, and they lose in one of the great Elite Eight games, and so he's been at it now for like 10 years total, and he's been good for like five or six, and so now it's he can't make the Final Four, he can't win the big one, and I'm like, well, where did this come from? Like, how is that invented on the heels of a guy who turned a program from nothing into something, to a multi-time 30-game winner, which, you know, back then the schedule was tighter, so 30 was even bigger than it is now, and it's still huge. But that's what people do now. And it's like they have to have a weapon. You can't just be a great coach. And Andy Reid, okay, so he made the Super Bowl, so you can't say that. So now you got to put the bar one higher and say, well, he didn't ever win the Super Bowl, so how good is he? I mean, it's just garbage. And we do this all the time in every sport. And it's, and of course, no one, you know, you guys not only know it from Andy Reid, but know it from Bill Self back in the day. He made the Elite Eight like four times. Tulsa, Illinois, a couple of times at Kansas. Well, clearly he can't win the big one until he does, and then he wins the championship. And you remember the look on Bill's face after Jason Richards' shot rimmed out. He wasn't thrilled, excited. He was relieved. It's got to stop. Won't it ever stop? And so when I go on Sunday to write this column, I look up his record, all right? And I knew it was good, okay? But I look at the – and when you go on Pro Football Reference, it gives you the record. Like, if you ask for coaches' records, it gives you every coach all time. And then you have to go by what category you want. So you press the clicker on wins and losses. You just want how many career wins. And I do that. And it's – wait, he's sixth? He's sixth all time? I had no idea. I mean, it's Halas and Shula and a couple other guys and Andy Reid. How can that guy not be a great coach? Come on.
Well, I remember, gosh, when I covered Roy Williams, he used to say that about Dean Smith all the time. You know, when Dean Smith finally won his national championship, he famously apparently told Roy, "I'm no better coach today than I was yesterday." And it's funny because Dean Smith finally won his, Roy Williams finally won his, Bill Self finally won his. Like, these coaches, they finally win one. And I think most of us think it's just a matter of time before Andy Reid finally wins his. Do you think it's going to be this year?
Well, I think so. But obviously, I don't think they've played anything quite like what they're playing on Super Bowl Sunday. The defense is better than most of what they faced, but not impregnable. I watched the Steelers with Mason Rudolph score, I think, 20 on them in the fourth. Now, obviously, they've gotten better and all that, but it was like the fourth game of the year or so, third or fourth. And I don't know that you just faced Henry, who everybody said couldn't be stopped, the Chiefs did, and they stopped him. And I was, in some ways, astonished, in some ways appalled in the way that San Francisco ran the ball on Green Bay. I just, even though the defense is at KC is very good, maybe not elite, I just can't see them going into a Super Bowl and getting trucked like that. I just can't. And then on top of that, although I think San Francisco's defense is better than some that KC have conquered, I also don't think that KC has faced an offense this proficient. They've gotten themselves in holes twice and gotten themselves out. Obviously, it'd be better if they didn't bother with the hole in a Super Bowl, because it's a different kind of game, and maybe, you know, the Super Bowl's so big, you don't want to get yourself in a hole again. But if you do, you know, you can get out of it, man. I mean, they showed that in both of their two playoff games, and even if the hole is enormous, they've shown they can get out of it.
All right, Mike, before we move on to the basketball, you also wrote an interesting article, and you said that you noticed that some Chiefs fans were saying they don't know how to watch the Super Bowl now that the Chiefs are finally in it. And you said, as someone that has been following the Steelers for 50 years, you could give a seminar on watching Super Bowls. So he did all the do's and don'ts for NFL fans. You gave all the do's and don'ts, so tell us, give us a couple of tips for people that are losing their mind right now and how they should best enjoy Super Bowl Sunday.
Well, lesson number one is don't lose your mind right now.
Well, too late.
What I mean by that is, like, okay, so we're 3 days in, so you still have time to get this right, all right? In 1995, I remember this, I was driving back from a road game. I was covering Memphis Tigers, and they played at Southern Miss, so they play in the afternoon, and I got to drive back to Memphis that night, and I turn on ESPN Radio, and my old buddy John Clayton, who I worked with in Pittsburgh, is on talking about the Steelers. And then all of a sudden it hit me. Like, this is your time. Like, don't blow these 2 weeks. Don't get nervous or anxious or anything. This is like a two-week birthday party where it's all about you. If you really love your team, it's all about you, okay? It's not about San Francisco, and it's not about the other 30 teams that aren't in. It's about your guys. And everybody's talking about your guys. And some people may pick them apart, but most of the time they're going to be talking positively because your guys are in the Super Bowl. And so enjoy it. Like I said, it's like a two-week birthday party. And so right up until kickoff, and then you can get nervous at kickoff. That's okay, because you want to win it. But until then, just enjoy the fact that it's your team is everybody's envy. So that's lesson number one. Lesson number two is, do not, if you really care about this stuff. Now, if you don't care, do whatever. But if you care about this, don't throw a Super Bowl party. That's a mandatory. You think, oh, it's been 50 years, let's throw a party. No, don't do that. Throw a party next year when the Steelers are in it. And do that.
Easy there. Yeah. Easy there.
Did I not tell you that my grand scheme here is for the Chiefs to win this? And then for them to have a Super Bowl hangover, did I not tell you that?
Hey, you know, we'll take it. No, I'll take it right now.
Only, there you go.
Hey, only person going to have a hangover is Nate, not the Chiefs.
So don't throw a party and don't go to one if you like. If the game matters to you, those are two. Because like as I said in my column, do you really want to miss that crucial third and two play because someone said they needed more chips? No.
Yeah.
No. So that's those. You know, like I said, Super Bowl parties are fantastic for when somebody else's team is in it, and there you get enough. You know, you had 49 years to do that, so don't do it this time. And then you know, make sure that you're watching it with somebody who is not transitory, like not transitory in your life. Like I watched one of the Steelers' 70 Super Bowls with a high school girlfriend. That didn't last, and now I'm like, you know, I mean, don't I wish that I'd shared that with somebody that mattered? And then the year later, I was watching at home with a friend who brought a date, and this is a true story. They paid no attention to the game in the first half. They were just totally paying attention to each other. And then they got up at halftime, went into the living room, and I never saw them again, so I'm watching alone.
Oh.
the game, I mean, not watching them.
But, you know, I was going to say, wait a minute, Mike. I don't know what kind of parties you were going to, but
it's fine. So that's, you know, those are the key lessons. That's how you do it. I watched two in the 2000s, that the Steelers won in the 2000s with my wife, somebody that's going to be there with me, and was into it, and so we had a great time watching those two games. And you know, so that's the way, you know, go do it with your best friend, with your kid, you know, with people that matter to you, and that's, you know, that's the best way to go.
And you know, hey, you also got to make sure it's the right wife, because there could be a couple of those over the Super Bowl runs.
Trump here, right. You know.
Well, you know,
I've been married for 36 years.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
It's good. Lead to some awkward conversations, like with your girlfriend. Hey, sweetheart, I love you. Love to watch Super Bowl with you, but you might not be in the picture in 10 years. So I'm sorry, but I'm not watching this one with you.
You're not a franchise quarterback. You're just a stopgap. All right.
You're a game manager.
You're not a first round draft pick. Okay. Before we run out of time with you, Mike. Of course, we saw what happened in Lawrence between Kansas State and Kansas, and K-State. A couple of players get suspensions, and McCormick gets a 2-game suspension. Love gets an 8-game suspension. But the headline here is Silvio De Souza getting 12 games. I'd just like to get your reaction to what happened and now what the fallout is.
Yeah, you know, I think first of all, the fallout, I was disappointed in the reaction to the suspensions. I thought that they were mostly fair. They were all in the ballpark of what was warranted. If Silvio hadn't picked up the chair, a lot of things would have been different. I've been a little disappointed, and I think a lot of it comes back to that chair, the stool or whatever. If that doesn't go in the air, then I think a lot of it is viewed differently. I've been bothered by the idea that it was his fault because he taunted. No, that's a technical foul, people. That's a technical foul. The refs were on scene. They could have dealt with that. I saw a guy on the same night who plays for Illinois step on the chest, Christian Laettner style, but maybe with a little bit even more force, of a Purdue player and get thrown out of the game, as he should have been. But I didn't see any Purdue players rushing off the bench because that happened. No, they let the referees do their jobs. And so I'm not buying that because Silvio stood over the player and taunted him that necessitated the reaction that it got. So I'm a little disappointed in the narrative that's built up around that he ignited that. No, and I don't buy that. It's the same thing they tried to do to Mason Rudolph when he jawed and wrestled a little bit with Myles Garrett in the Steelers-Browns game a few months ago and then got struck in the head with a helmet. No, he didn't start it. There are routine sportsmanship issues in every game practically that we have contested in the public sphere. And they are almost universally dealt with by the combatants, participants, competitors, whatever you want to call them, and the officials whose job it is to deal with those sorts of things. They don't all require the reaction that Myles Garrett put forth when he struck Mason Rudolph with a helmet, or what happened with the Kansas State bench. So I don't blame Silvio for what happened. I do, however, blame him for picking up that chair and for that becoming, you know, the focal point. If he'd never done that, it would have been a pretty terrible fight. But a lot of people got very uneasy when he picked that up, even though someone grabbed it from behind, he pulled it free, then ultimately chose to drop it. I don't know what was in his head in choosing to drop it, but I do think that the fact that he did drop it saved him even greater consequence than he faced.
I was discussing this. People have been breaking down that video, like the Zapruder film, and trying to understand intent is such a difficult thing. Somebody said to me yesterday, when you watch one angle of it, and there's one video that somebody showed that's from behind DeSosa, so you can kind of see what he's seeing. And at one point, it looks like there's three or four guys that are coming after him. And it was brought up to me that, you know, if you feel like you're being, at this point, you're now engaged in an altercation with multiple people. If a guy goes and grabs something out of self-defense because he feels like he's under attack, is that different than a guy who goes to grab something to say, I'm going to attack? Like the Garrett situation with Rudolph,
Here's why I don't think so,
okay,
honestly, Nate. Because if he grabbed the chair and held it in front of him,
right,
as a way of warding off whatever attack he may have perceived, that would have been different. But he had it over his head. And so I think that's what bothered people. Like, if he'd grabbed it and held it in front of him, like a, you know, lion tamer style,
mm-hmm,
I think that would have been different. But you know, I don't think that that holding it over his head was a wise move. And honestly, that's the reason he got that look. No question, elevated his punishment above everyone else's. And I thought that his apology was wonderful. I thought it felt sincere. I thought it felt heartful, and I saw a lot of reaction from that to that. That it was really eloquent and touching, and I think that a lot of people felt like that was an important step. And I don't know the exact timing. I saw it after the punishment was issued, so I don't know when it came out. Whether someone might say that it was designed to influence and mitigate his punishment, but I didn't feel it was any of that. I felt it was sincere. And I know some of the people that do what I do were angry that he's going to be allowed to play, or bothered or whatever, that he's going to be allowed to play again this year. I would have been angry or bothered if he weren't.
All right, Mike. And how do you, final question, how do you think this impacts this Big 12 race? Because, I mean, there's not a whole lot of room for error for Kansas right now. I know it's early, but Baylor already has wins in Lubbock and in Lawrence, and they're the number one team in the nation right now, and they look really, really good. Your thoughts on what this does to the race moving forward?
I don't think it has a big impact. Honestly, Silvio had not been making that grand of contributions. I mean, he certainly was a helpful player, but I don't think it's going to have that great a consequence. And it's one of the things that I found interesting was, you know, people were acting like this is designed so that he can come back for the conference tournament. Like, I mean, he's averaging 2 points a game. I mean, like I said, he's a useful player. He's another guy that can get you minutes inside and all that. But he's not a game-changing guy. I mean, this is just about giving a kid what he deserves, or he doesn't deserve any more than he got. He could have gotten less. But people asked me what he should have gotten. I said in response, 10 games. And so they went 2 over that. If they'd gone 2 under that, it wouldn't have bothered me. If they'd hit the number, it wouldn't have bothered me. If they'd gone farther than they did, I think that would have been totally unwarranted. And so I'm glad he gets to play at the end of the regular season, and I'm glad he gets to play in whatever postseason there is. I don't think that it makes an enormous difference in Kansas. KU has about 75 other things on the checklist that they have to be good at to be good before they get to whether or not, you know, Silvio's 10, 12, whatever minutes matter a lot outside of situational foul trouble.
Mike, thank you very much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Okay, fellas, thank you.
That is Mike DeCourcy. I retweeted those two articles, columns he wrote, one about Andy Reid, one about a guide to watching the Super Bowl when your team is in it. And so you can go check that out. Now my mind is now cluttered with the image of Sylvia DeSouza with a stool, using it like a lion tamer and a whip and, and making people do tricks and things. I don't know.
That would have diffused the whole situation a lot better. Fun. I have the image in my mind of all the awkward conversations that boyfriends and girlfriends are going to be having ahead of this Super Bowl now, where they say, I really like you, but I don't think you're Super Bowl material.
Bottom line is this.
That's going to be a tough conversation.
If your boyfriend or girlfriend is not watching the Super Bowl game with you after reading Mike DeCourcy's column, that means you're getting ready to be dumped. So, you know what? Stay alert. Back after this on WHB.